How do consultants work effectively with diverse and marginalized communities, especially those who may challenge consulting norms? How do they build meaningful relationships in order for authentic community voices and data to be gathered? Hello, and welcome to the 8th episode of At the Mic, a podcast brought to you by Arts Consultants Canada, l'Association des Consultants Canadiens en Arts. In this episode of At the Mic, consultants and ACCA members, Dr. Terry Lee Brennan and Annalie Adair, discuss their approach to working with equity-deserving groups and Indigenous communities. They emphasize the importance of trust, relationship building, and challenging norms in their work. They highlight the concept of story reporting, where they collect and present qualitative data that honors the authenticity of voices in the community. ACCA acknowledges the support of the Canada Council for the Arts for this podcast series. Nous remercions le Conseil des Arts du Canada pour son soutien à cette série de balados. As an intercultural planner, Dr. Terry Lee Brennan combines a 30-year professional career in the social sciences, from anthropology to public policy, with national to global experiences working on 4 continents and across 12 countries. With a lens rooted in social equity, Terry currently services clients as a consultant through her company, Inclusive Voices, as well as through a senior leadership role at Ontario Presents. Terry plays a national role as a sector trainer for the Cultural Human Resources Council of Canada in maintaining respectful workplaces in the arts, while continuing to support various cities and municipalities across Canada in their development of cultural plans, public art plans, and building Indigenous relationships based in reciprocity. Terry proudly identifies as mixed Kanyagihaga, aka Mohawk, and British descent. Annalie Adair is a renowned cultural planner and public art consultant with over 30 years of experience. She is director of A. Adair & Associates and the founder of Public Art Support. Annalie is known for her innovative community engagement practices and managing public art projects of all scales. Her notable recent projects include CHRC's Talent to Lead program, the City of Ottawa's Light Rail Transit Public Art program, and contributing to the Edmonton Arts and Heritage Plan. Throughout her career, she has held various roles, such as Program Director of the City of Ottawa's Public Art Program, Visual Arts Manager for the Organization of Saskatchewan Arts Councils, and Collections and Public Art Coordinator for the City of Regina. Annalie is also a founding member of the Creative City Network of Canada's National Public Art Roundtable. And now, here are Terry Lee Brennan and Annalie Adair.
So Sego's gonna go say wagwego. Wat wanumaradon. Thank you for joining us today. I just said hello and welcomed you in the language of my ancestors, Kanyakaha, which is otherwise known as Mohawk. And if you are not ancestrally from this land, I am pleased to share this land with you and glad you could be here today, as well as welcoming you and your ancestors for the journey that we are on constantly on this land today, as otherwise known as Canada. Terry Lynn Brennan Yungyats, Gunyigahaga British, Nadjododan. I do identify of mixed heritage, Gunyigahaga, which is Mohawk and British, and my family comes from 6 nations of the Grand River, Ashwiga Najidaron, and I currently am coming to you from Gweno Gweskigo and Gweno de Gunyugari, which is Wolf Island, Ontario, off the coast of Kingston and at the junction of Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence River. Again, thank you for joining us today, and I hope that you get something out of this conversation. Over to you, Annalie.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you for that welcome. I, too, come from the Dish with One Spoon territory in the St. Lawrence, further down from Terry than Lake Ontario near Gananoque. I'm constantly learning from Terry, so I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We've worked together now over I'm thinking 10, 12 years, something like that. And in the beginning, one of the reasons we continued to work together is that mutual trust and relationship building and challenging, I would say, the norms specifically around how we engage with equity deserving groups and Indigenous peoples, young people. And that's what excites me most about working together with Terry, is it allows me to learn constantly. And so maybe we could just start with those learnings, Terry, like in terms of when we started out learning together. And for me, I think it was how to actually start to change systems and change the way in which we work with these communities. It goes back at least 10 years ago when we started this within the municipalities. What would you say were the key pieces of that change and how we measured that change?
I think that I will answer that with a little bit of a statement back to you, Annalee, in the sense that as someone who has often been challenged in the workplace throughout my professional career, because I didn't necessarily think and have conversations in the normal way, or I shouldn't say normal, but in a way that was unchallenging or metaphorically kind of scripted, I found that in you totally role modeled for me respect and trust, which is a very difficult thing to find in a workplace, to be quite frank. And I've often regarded you as pretty much the only manager in my career that has ever trusted me in all that we do. And because of that relationship starting out and then expanding as it has, we have kind of role modeled a relationship that I think has set us up to role model for the communities that we work with, and how each of us respects the other for their knowledge and for what they bring to the conversations to work together, understanding the gifts and the experience that we each have in different ways and different thinking processes. And so when we approach a community together, through the years of conversations that we've had, we now are at a point as a consultants group to recognize that Indigenous peoples should be leading the conversations of how community basically represents itself and how visitors to a community should see that community in its extended history, starting with Indigenous peoples. Now, I do want to caveat all of this by saying I am not an expert. I have certainly lived very much a dual life. I was not raised on reserve. My experiences and my knowledge have come tangentially through my family, through my father and other leaders, knowledge keepers that I've met over the years who have taught me and coached me and nurtured my own way of thinking and doing. I'm also, you know, one person who identifies with Mohawk heritage. I can never speak for all the Mohawk people in the world, let alone all the Indigenous people in the world. So the way that I've come to work with things is perhaps a very common way that Indigenous peoples work with others. But I think through the relationship with you, Annalee, and the way we work, we certainly approach communities in saying that the violence that has happened through colonization has eradicated the voices, not only of Indigenous peoples, but also all marginalized individuals, from Black people of color, those that are disabled, those that identify within the LGBT2+Q community. As you said, young people, elderly, single mothers, all of these people over the years have been and are continuously not considered when planning happens, when surveys happen, and how the language of those processes that colonial governments, which is every government that we live within, operates, and who they actually try and create questions for or try and extract information and knowledge from. It's often the same people in the same sectored silos. And so with our approach, it really is about approaching community through a respectful and humble, you know, foundation that is rooted in both the Anishinaabe teachings as well as Haudenosaunee knowledge and a good way of approaching people. And so when we go into community and I am starting out as the first voice on the ground and engaging these peoples, I come with protocol that I've learned or just have brought within my own understanding of different cultures across the country. And I listen. It really is about listening and trying to grasp and understand how violent people have been forced with and how marginalized people have been put to the side and included or not included in conversations. Is it stereotypical? Is it token? But also in grappling within the arts and understanding that the arts can be that thoroughfare for all marginalized peoples to find balance of voice and of body in community.
I think for those who are listening, I think it's, for us, it's the approach just to sort of give some context. We've been working a lot on culture plans, public art projects, strategic planning with arts organizations, etc. But in every case, we kind of bring the same approach to the context in which we're working in. And as Terry said, starting off with Terry being, you know, the kind of the first consultant to engage the community, and we take our lead from equity deserving groups and from Indigenous peoples to then kind of set the stage or set the tone of how we will then engage the settler organizations who predominantly kind of dominate the scene still within these kinds of environments that we're working within. And that does change the way in which planning does work. So I think that's the kind of key. We do have a few slides that we'll include in the notes for this podcast if everyone is interested in terms of the kind of engagement framework, the step-by-step piece of that. But I think, Terry, I think some of the learnings for us have been the whole concept of baby steps in consulting and how far we can push. We've certainly had a lot of pushback politically in terms of what we've presented as the voice of equity deserving Indigenous and young people. And it is a little bit of a slow change approach sometimes. And sometimes we're quite bold in honoring the voice and authenticity of the voice by the people. And one of the techniques that have been used and have certainly brought that to the table is story reporting. And how that differs from in the qualitative data versus the quantitative data and surveys and so on. So I think that's worth talking about in terms of how we report back to the client and how we present our findings in different ways. Also, our engagement techniques and tools, I think, is something that I'd like to touch on for people that I think would be helpful. So starting with that, can you describe the story reporting concept?
Sure. I mean, a lot of it is intuitive and based in a knowledge, again, of protocol and some understanding of protocols. Certainly as a woman who does identify from Six Nations of the Grand River and of Kanyekahaka in descent, I know that I'm often off territory in the work that we do. And so the first part of my approach is rooted in the three pillars of the Great Law through the Haudenosaunee process, which is asking for entry into that space and asking for entry through the Indigenous peoples of that space, and then hopefully gaining approval, which so far hasn't not happened, but gaining approval. And then, going from that piece first layer of asking for entry to respecting the land and water and air through, you know, a power process. And in the great law, power actually means the responsibility to all of these aspects in relationship. And we indeed are in relationship with the land, the water, the air, as well as all living and non-living things, and including, obviously, other people. And then listening to stories, as you say, nudging histories, nudging circles of thought and experience, which then takes me further, hopefully, into a stage of righteousness, which is basically then the accountability factor to meeting community and meeting larger numbers of people in the community, to getting a bigger concept of how that community functions and operates, not just within itself, but obviously with the neighbors that it has and the settler neighbors it has, the settler government that it operates within, and trying to create a level of experiential data, for lack of a better word in this context. But basically, it is storytelling. It's telling the stories of how these folks have come to understand their relationship, not only with the land and the water and the air, but their relationship with these other people in their communities, on their territory. And therefore, at the end of the process, I've compiled, it is a story report that is basically rooted in the restoration of these voices and bodies in all conversations, that has synthesized the community's interests towards having them revitalize and regain their own positions of responsibility and accountability in their own communities, but also equally across the locality of which they now share with settlers.
I think too, when we engage with these groups, I think we often, if we're not, well, obviously we're not from all the places in which we work. So what we usually do is hire as part of our team, and it's usually in our proposal stage that we will hire a local engagement team, primarily artists, young artists, who will act as our community engagement team on the ground. And I think that's also been helpful in community, engaging community and community groups. And one of the things that, you know, that everyone, I think, has, and certainly in cities where we work, or even organizations in which we work with, it's the same question about how do we get these groups to the table, as opposed to how do we actually engage these groups in the place that they're in. So we go to, you know, we hold sessions in for young people in breweries, or we, you know, we go to where people are, as opposed to, I mean, we also gather them in places of public interest. But what do you think your experience has been in doing that, Terry, in terms of how has that changed the way in which the data is being collected?
Well, my experience is very different per regionality and per nation that I visit. And certainly, you know, the communities we've been engaging, there's always been more than one nation or, Métis union involved. And sometimes those nations are part of a larger ethnic, cultural, language identity. And sometimes they're not. Sometimes they are completely different, such as if we do work here in Eastern Ontario, we're very cognizant that it's shared land between the Algonquin Anishinaabe people and the Haudenosaunee Six Nations people, as well as, the Wyandot people who basically occupied this land in different ways before all of our nations moved in north of what is now the American border, full time and overtime. And so going into community is, for me, it's always exciting. It's daunting, but it's also exciting. I don't want to go against protocol. I don't want to make any assumptions coming from the perspective that I have or the experiences that I have. And so working with different communities and groups is always very satisfying at the end, extremely exciting. I find that I'm rejuvenated in my own space because simply I've worked with people that I'm learning from. And so when I do engage with someone who's already on the ground, knows I'm coming, is willing to introduce me to their collective, you know, colleagues or family, I've been given a very precious gift to visit and to learn and to have these conversations with leaders in communities, from knowledge keepers to elders to artists. And so these processes, it's just as important to create these relationships and to establish these relationships as it is towards, it's more important to create these relationships than it is to actually get the information that's needed for this particular project at this particular time. Because what we hope to do in establishing these relationships and bringing all of these different voices into the work that we're doing, we're actually hoping to create a bridge so that those voices will continue to now work with the organizations we work with or the government positions and people we work with. And we're kind of creating that bridge of connection that will continue on after this particular plan or policy or project is completed. Because that's what's missing for a lot of settler organizations. They don't have the current experience, or they haven't understood the processes for reaching out, or time constraints. Everybody certainly is on a time constraint process within today's society. So a lot of what we do is about relationship building, and relationship building between our clients and the local communities that surround them to continue beyond the project that we're kind of rooted in at the time. And I get such joy in learning about those local stories and those local experiences, and telling those stories to the client and saying, this is where your respectful neighbors are at, and you need to listen to this, and you need to honor this, these voices going forward. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it's the, yes, yeah, it does. And that does, I mean, I think one of the learnings as consultants for us has been the time we allocate and the resources we allocate to engagement, clients are not actually prepared for, nor have they actually properly resourced the project, whatever it may be, funding, you know, fund wise. But I will say, and Terry, I'm sure you'll agree, is that if we spend the most, an inordinate amount of time on engagement, and by doing so, the rest of it flows. Obviously, the questions we ask during these times of engagement are critical so that we have enough to actually, our role really as consultants in this, and I'm sure most consultants will feel this way, but we take it quite literally. We actually have the people of the communities plan the plan. I mean, we actually just facilitate their voice throughout, but it does take an inordinate amount of time for the engagement component of any planning that we do. So, I mean, most of our work is long-term, as you say, 10-year plans, 5-year plans, or strategic plans that may be 3 years and so on. So they're not short-term contracts, consulting contracts, although they are. Our contract is short-term, but the work in which we do is more long-term, and that doesn't even say it.
No, I also just wanted to kind of share, as I was thinking about things too, even more, is how when I get on the ground in places, I'm usually the, you know, as we say, I'm the first person usually who enters into these newer communities that we've just began working with as a client. I also not only seek out and look for those one-on-one conversations, it's also about being very observant to the physicality of the community. And so I'm often very much in tune to looking around, to seeing what is the ratio between nature and concrete? I'm looking around for indigenous language and signage and other types of identity markers around the communities. I'm looking for native versus invasive species and rewilding, replanting, the visibility of indigenous and all marginalized peoples. Are they, you know, are they working in various positions that appear to be, you know, white collar jobs or professional jobs, or are they just, you know, seen as taxi drivers or cashiers in the local grocery store? And then I'm also looking for those markers on the landscape in art, especially. Are they tokenistic? Are they authentic? Were they actually created by an indigenous hand? So it really becomes a full sensory, I call it a six-sense scape process that I also go through when I'm on the ground. And it's difficult for folks who maybe have never experienced a level of discrimination or marginalization to see that and or to experience that. I certainly, you know, right away I gauge the observation of appearance in the sense of appearance of male to female or non-gender and look at those types of balanced ratios, because certainly our communities are well populated with a diversity of people across the spectrum of marginalized identities. But where and how do they show up in the fabric of a community, either through, you know, two-dimensional images or practicality of on the street or in spaces? So I just also wanted to kind of share that. It's a lot of work, but it's a normal process that I'd go through anyway, wherever I am. So I guess maybe that's just another inherent thing to take into consideration.
I think visibility of culture within a community is one of our key questions. You know, is your culture visible, you know, in the community? And that's, you know, it's a sort of a quest to find out. And it's a big, also what's missing in the visual landscape is critical to have these kinds of conversations, because I think people, settler community, and certainly clients that we work with are not aware that the visibility of other cultures is not within the landscape. And so that's, you know, whether there's large facilities or buildings, or as you say, whether it's public art or theater or whatever, what is the ratio and what is the scale in terms of that in your community? And, you know, as we know, I think from being in community and lots of communities across the country, it is quite apparent that there is a very different scale, and you find equity deserving community culture in very hidden, I would say, places, except for, you know, so I think this is the kind of conversations we have, and this is the type of reporting back to clients that we do in terms of statistically and quantitatively as well as qualitative. And I think that starts to change the conversation. It's just a type of a reporting that is quite a little bit different than the norm, I would say, that they're used to getting back from consultant teams.
Which scares a lot of our clients.
Yes.
You know, I don't think any of our clients to date have ever said they did not want this information. They just did not know the extent of it, or were afraid to learn the extent of it. And therefore, it really does become an internal reprocessing of operation of our clients. And that takes time, which, you know, we all know. But to change up 400 years of colonial processes isn't going to take a season to rectify in a good way, and to do it in a way that is authentic and peaceful and fair. Yeah.
And also structural, right? I mean, oftentimes, you know, we will put into place structures and internal, not policies so much, but actually decision-making processes that along with not advisory, but decision-making entities that are composed of Indigenous peoples, so that they actually have a parallel decision-making role. So that is also kind of one of the pieces that we like to end on. It is a long way to get there. And it does take, in some cases, years to get these plans, you know, approved rather than months. But it does make it a little more sustainable. It's not just a flash in the pan. You're engaged for, you know, 2 months out of a planning process. And thank you very much. We'll take that with us and we'll, give it consideration. As Terry said before, I think one of the most important pieces of that we can offer today is this kind of building in sustainability to the process so that these relationships continue. So thank you.
Thank you, Emily.
We look forward to working with you more.
Continuing to do so. Yeah. I always learn from you, always in different ways. Yeah.
Mutual admiration society. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I also learn from you. So it's been a wonderful journey and we hope to continue on.
Indeed. Indeed. Thank you.
And that wraps up our 8th edition of At the Mic, a podcast of Arts Consultants Canada. For information on ACCA and our members, please check us out online at artsconsultants.ca. To send us feedback or questions on anything you hear in this podcast series, please email us at podcast@artsconsultants.ca. And remember to check our show notes in this podcast for links mentioned during the program. Et notez bien que quelques épisodes sont en français et nous offrons accès à un service de traduction de ne rien manquer. Thank you so much for joining us on At the Mic. Remember to subscribe to this podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Until next time, and again, thanks for listening. À la prochaine.